It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Thursday, July the 2nd, 2026. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come join me at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at TheTalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. Welcome, everybody, to a pre-holiday weekend edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. If you're already off, hope you're enjoying yourself. Maybe you're getting ready for a long weekend. There's baseball. I know it's not baseball that you probably are looking forward to. Mets going to Atlanta, but there will be baseball this weekend. And what better way to spend 4th of July weekend than watching America's pastime? Obviously, as we head into the holiday weekend, this is the time of the year, and the baseball season flies by. We talk about that all the time, where you're really amping up. The trade deadline is about a month away, a little over a month away, and you're starting to get ready for the pennant race, the dog days of August, the stretch run of September. And that's not going to be happening here in New York because the Mets have struggled. The Mets are not only a second division club, they're among some of the worst teams in baseball. You'll be looking more towards them and their odds of getting the number one draft pick versus making the postseason. So it's not the way you would want to spend the holiday weekend as a Mets fan. Now, I come to you on this day off because I think it was for a couple of reasons. First, with the holiday coming this week, and give you some content to chew on leading into Sunday's show. Second, I think it was newsworthy, certainly very newsworthy, that the owner spoke, and the owner went on, as he normally does, with John Heyman and Joel Sherman over at their podcast at the New York Post. And I haven't really looked at social media because at this point, I think you have a camp of fans, and I don't, maybe you could illuminate this in the chat room or over email, let me know, for those who have the tolerance to listen to general talk radio. I don't know if that's the majority of people calling in to talk radio or the majority of Mets fans that are going to spend the rest of the season and maybe the rest of the next 24 months, anytime something goes wrong, demanding that David Stearns gets fired or looking at this organization with the glass half empty. And to a certain degree, that's understandable. And it was something that we've talked about. It was something that I was concerned about. And maybe I'm repeating myself here. But when Cohen came in, when Steve Cohen came in and had this big checkbook, everybody thought the bad old days were over. Nothing ever was going to go wrong for the Mets anymore. They were now headed to a dynasty. And that quite simply never was something that I believed was accurate. Money made things easier. Money puts them in a different conversation. Money puts them at the table. But it doesn't take away from the pains of trying to build a championship team. Doesn't matter who you are, how smart your front office is, what sport you're in. There's always going to be bumps in the road as you try to make it to the promised land. And for the Mets and for Cohen, two out of the last, maybe two and a half out of the last 3 years, have not been that great. And you could even argue his first full season, 2021, was iffy. It's led to a controversial trade of Pete Crow Armstrong as the Mets tried to salvage something there, the final vestiges of Jacob deGrom. 2022 was incredible, but ended on a sour note. And it's funny, that goes down as a season that statistically is right up there with 86 and 88, but nobody talks about it because the Braves played like the 98 Yankees down the stretch, took the division away for the Mets, and the Mets went out against the Padres team that wasn't bad. A Padres team that came into Citi Field and took it to them in a three-game wild card series. So with all the noise that's been going on, Carlos Mendoza gets fired. Stearns gets up at the podium and nobody likes the way he talks. Eric Chavez, who I was going to actually talk about Chavez's comments today. We're going to get to Chavez over the weekend because I think that there was a lot of meat in there. And I think instead of just painting Chavez with a broad brush and saying he's a bitter employee or he's a genius because I hate Stearns, there's some really interesting things he talked about and a dynamic going on in the game that I think deserves a lot more time than I could give you this morning on a midweek show. So with all that noise going around, Cohen had tweeted that he was going to speak soon. He picked the New York Post guys. He always seems to talk to them. Sherman and Heyman, whatever you think of them, whatever you buy, you know, and I have issues sometimes with both of them about how they have somewhat of an agenda against the Mets. I think that they tend to enjoy some of the challenges around the Mets, particularly Sherman, but maybe that's just me being a little sensitive to their reporting. That doesn't matter. But they do an incredible job on the podcast. They get great guests. And Cohen is confident enough where he could go on and comfortable enough to go on and message the fan base. Now, I have to say, and I'm not just saying this, and I know that I get, especially on social media, knocked about being a shill or an organization guy or someone who's going to defend the organization. And historically, anybody who's listened to me for 20 years knows that's not true. Absolutely not. I understand business. I understand business principles. I understand how hard managing anything is, much less not only a baseball team, an organization. And, you know, right now, with Cohen coming on, I did not expect anything but what I heard yesterday. And you listen to it. I don't think I need to rehash it, but that's my job here. I will. I'll give you my commentary. He went on. He gave David Stearns a vote of confidence. He told you exactly what I told you was going to happen just a week ago. He's got a contract. He's going to live out to the contract. Year five, if things aren't great, he's going to evaluate. He understands what Stearns is doing. Stearns speaks with him, outlines what the organizational process and philosophy is. To me, and he didn't give you too much, he has the same concerns that you and I have about player development. That you know, seems to be something that may derail them and even become a problem in the short term. He talked about the payroll and maybe the payroll ballooning a little bit next year, which should give you an indication about why they needed to move on from Pete Alonso and potentially how they're looking at things going forward, where he's like, hey, I'm going to lose money, but I'm not just going to go out there and spend blindly. Maybe why they're looking at the latter years of the Brandon Nimmo contract and things like that. But ultimately, I think the biggest thing that he talked about was the need not to churn and burn the organization by constantly hiring and firing somebody. Now, I know what a lot of people are going to say is, well, that means that you're going to just put up with a mediocre performance between now and the end of the contract, almost like a sunk cost, almost like an over-the-hill player. You know, think back to how the Mets kept Jason Bay and maybe Oliver Perez around a year longer than maybe anybody wanted at some point. Thinking something along those lines. But in the end, Cohen is somebody, and I don't have any reason not to believe him, that is actually straddling the line of not being a meddlesome owner in the mold of George Steinbrenner or Peter Angelos, or you could go back to a number, maybe Artie Moreno comes up, any number of owners over the history of, let's just talk about baseball. You want to talk about this town, you can bring up Jim Dolan all the time. That's pertinent because of, you know, what's going on over at Madison Square Garden the last couple of months. But he's straddling the line between being meddlesome and poking his nose in something that, even as a wealthy guy, a billionaire, he knows nothing about building a baseball team and about player development and about really the mechanics of how a baseball team works. He knows business principles, and he knows that he signs the checks. And he made it very clear, these people work for me. I'm not just sitting back worried about a casino, sitting around trading stocks and running .72. I'm asking questions. I want to make sure that the people that I pay, and pay a lot of good money, actually are putting together some kind of plan to get us out of this. And to me, these things are all obvious, but clearly in today's day and age, especially with social media, and also because I think there's a vast misunderstanding about what a president of baseball operations does. And I'm actually going to outline it for you guys here on the show, because not because I'm trying to be condescending here or a know-it-all or be a smart aleck, because I really, what amazes me, I don't think there's an understanding about what Stearns does. He's not a general manager. And you eliminate him from the equation. You're eliminating more than just the guy that makes decisions on the team on the field. I mean, I actually saw someone tweeted me yesterday, well, what does a GM do versus a president of baseball operations? Way different. Way different. And in a lot of ways, when the Wilpons were in charge, the problem was Jeff Wilpon did a lot of president of baseball operations type of work, and he had a GM under him. And that was the problem because he wasn't really a baseball guy. He should have been more acting as Cohen does, signing checks and just making sure the people that he employs are being held accountable. So I think the biggest positive out of this interview is that if anybody thought this guy doesn't care, or that he's distracted about the casino, or that he's losing his passion for this toy, he put that to bed. I mean, he even talked about how he's failed, about how he wanted to make a difference with this club. And he wanted to make a difference for New York. He talked about his family getting on his case, how they watch games every night. He's probably watching more ball games than you or I are doing right now. And I was always worried, and I talked about this when he first came on. I go, the best version of Cohen you're going to get is going to be the first 5 years. It's a new toy. He wants to make an impact. He's excited about being in this sports spotlight. He's got a little bit of money he could burn. And if my concern was always, if it didn't work out, he's going to sour on the whole thing. He's going to start to see the losses mounting, and he's going to pull back, and he's going to be just like every other owner. And right now, that doesn't seem to be the case. Now, there's always a budget, but he even admitted that if it makes sense, I got a great life, he said. I'm not really worried about the losses. I'm not worried about the money. I'll do what it takes if it makes sense. He's still going to do that. Everybody's going to focus on the quote, and the hero quote is, well, I'm really worried. Well, he should be worried about the player development. He should be worried about how bad the young players have been. But I also don't think that we should paint the brush of the whole player development system on Beatty, Vientos, Alvarez, and Mauricio. I think he brought up something that we've all talked about. And I'll tell you what, if I didn't know any better, he listens to the Talking Mets podcast. Because everything he outlined on this program are things that we talked about, things that we felt he should be thinking about, things that we're thinking about. It's not rocket science here. It's really not. I mean, he even brought up the Lindor Soto situation about how these are the foundational guys. Now, I know everybody's is going to get into, well, he admitted they had issues. Nobody ever said that they weren't annoyed by each other last year, but to suggest that that's even has anything to do with why they had got injured this year, or that the incorporation of new players hasn't gone well, or this season has gone south, I mean, that's just silly. I think one of the more revealing things that he brought up, and maybe it's something that's coming from him, or maybe it's even something that Stearns in the front office are starting to really understand, is that they may have underestimated the enormity of playing in New York and the transition to New York, not only the environment and coming into this type of situation, the weight of the uniform that we talk about. I think I'm going to steal the Josh Hart quote from now on. Instead of talking about the yoke around the neck, the weight of the uniform, because I think it sounds better. It's the same thing. And I mean, without saying names, I mean, it was clear he was talking about Bo Bichette when he talked about the, you know, short-term contract and the struggles and the figuring out New York and all those things. So to me, that was really interesting. But I mean, what other owner who lives in the 1% world that Cohen lives in? I mean, how, and he does, and this is a guy that you've seen the stories, buys, what, $120 million pieces of art or something like that, actually acknowledges the time investment that you as a fan, me, everybody makes in a baseball team, and how that ruins your day in and day out life, and how it takes away the joy. And for some people, I think it's taken away the joy, not only in the game, I think it's made them really miserable people. I mean, there are people, I love the Mets, you know, I love the Knicks, I love sports teams. and they can absolutely make or break your mood. I mean, let's be honest. And this is the mental health issue that sports brings up in all of us. And I say that without being disrespectful. I'm not trying to belittle or diminish mental health issues because they're out there and they're serious, and I'm not trying to do that. But all of us have a little craziness in us when it comes to sports. And I mean, how many of you, I mean, you're probably listening to this now and you probably could think of situations where the Mets have ruined your weekend. The Mets get swept in Atlanta, ruins your weekend. Your mood is bad. A great Sunday where you should be out enjoying a barbecue in your backyard or going out with your family or your significant other or your friends. And all of a sudden you're like, I'm just not in the mood. This just doesn't, you know, this doesn't make me happy because I'm still thinking about the bullpen blowing a 2-run lead in the 8th inning. I mean, he understands that. He understands that this is taking away, and I understand why people are angry. It's taking away a summer enjoyment that you only get so many of these. It brought up to me, at least, watching the Knicks win a few weeks ago, and it had been 53 years. And I said to myself, wow, you know, I'm going to be 50 in January. So I'm not old, but I'm not young. If the Knicks do another 50-year drought, I'm never going to see another championship again because I don't think I'm going to be around at 103. Maybe. I don't think I could be doing this. Who knows? So when you listen to Cohen, and I really encourage you, if you haven't listened to the entire show, listen to the entire show. Don't just go on X or wherever else and look at the picture of a quote or some commentary from the guys at SNY or some yo-yo on X. The ones that follow the Benignos of the world, I call them. Really listen to the entire interview. I think he was very erudite. I think he was very honest. I think he was very balanced. I think he had a good dose of optimism, accountability. And I think that's the biggest thing. He was very accountable. And I think he gave you exactly what you wanted to hear. I know this sucks. I know how much you care. I'm not taking it lightly. I'm willing to invest. I'm worried. But hey, I'm not just sitting back and saying, hey, David, you got this. It sounds good. I'm watching. And there's a guy who's a pretty big day job. Pretty big day job. I mean, if you listen to the broadcast, he's clearly talking to them right before the market opens. So I don't think you should take anything negative from Cohen's comments. I think you should feel better about the Mets organization in one sense because he's the owner. Now, do you feel worse because the owner's saying, hey, I'm worried about our player development? We're hugging the $300 million payroll in 2027. I don't know what the rules are going to be. I don't know what kind of season 2027 is going to be. You know, 2027 could be the last dance under the old wild, wild west of payroll. Yeah, those things would concern anybody that is in the position the Mets are in. But we knew that already. So this is going exactly as planned. As far as Mendoza, again, we speculated about this, and I think that was a part of the Chavez podcast. He was a guy they didn't want to bring back, whether it's because they want to blame him for everything, or quite simply, I believe, and I'll get deeper into this with the on Sunday when we talk a little bit more about Chavez's comments. They didn't feel he was the impactful manager that they needed going forward. I think that the Cohen influence, if there is any, in his evaluation of the front office and the club in general, is that a manager and a manager who has a more dynamic leadership component that could go out there, and whether that's a Pujols or David Ross or Rob Thompson or Alex Cora, we'll talk about that in October. We're not going to talk about that now unless something changes. I think the days of, at least for now, bringing in an extension to the front office, a nondiscreet first-timer that could easily be sitting in a boardroom with Stearns and Beltran and J.D. Martinez and the whole crew, and the only difference is he's sitting in a dugout with a uniform to to send the message from the front office. I think those days for at least now are over. I think the best manager that he's probably had, Cohen, in his tenure by far was Buck Showalter. And Buck was a baseball guy, and Buck was a guy that I thought could straddle both of those lines. He knew how it was to build an organization and the needs of an organization, but he knew how to talk baseball and provide leadership and connect with a group of young men, even though he was in his 70s when he had the job. And I think they got to get back to that. That was, if there's one mistake Cohen, I believe, has made, and I understand that he had to make it, is that he should have insisted that Buck finish out that contract. And at least for Stearns, and I said this from the start. If I was Stearns and I had taken over, I would have not purged the manager first thing. I would have tried to give it a year to see what's going on. But, you know, water under the bridge doesn't matter at this point. So, to me, the big takeaway, the owner cares. The owner cares a lot. The owner's very involved. It doesn't seem like he's involved in an intrusive way. There's tons of accountability. The idea that there's no accountability there, that's a social media narrative. I don't know what people want. You know, accountability for people is yelling, screaming, and firing. The only thing that there's going to be a certain group of people in this world that's going to make them happy is if they see someone lose their job, because that's accountable. Oh, you're punished now. Go to the corner and learn your lesson. That's also very expensive. Accountability is, you know, this guy that's worth $20 billion, that's paying you $10 million a year. When I say breathing down your neck, because he even brought this up to Sherman and Heyman, it's not that they're breathing down your neck and watching every move you make. It's like, hey, ask questions. Challenge the thought process. I don't understand where you're going with this. Why is, you say that player development isn't a linear process. Talk more about that to me. When you start to do things like that as the owner of an organization or business or whatever, you'll know who's full of you know what and who is, you know, and who isn't. And I'm sure they're looking at all sorts of things up and down the organization. I'm sure they are. And maybe one of them is something that we talked about on the show that was brought up in one of our mailbags, was maybe there needs to be more diverse types of thought here. Maybe it starts in the dugout, bringing in somebody who, you know, maybe has a little more cachet. You know, I know Albert Pujols being a Hall of Famer and a great baseball player has nothing to do with whether or not he could be a great manager. We talked about that. Ryan Sandberg, Hall of Famer, was not a great manager. But maybe he has leadership skills and a certain amount of credibility and cachet particularly with the fact that, and I think anybody who takes the job, at least in the next 3 to 4 years, because that's what the kind of contract that they're going to get, it's going to have to figure out, you know, I got Lindor and Soto here. These are the two guys that whatever's left of Lindor's prime, late prime, and how can I get the best out of Soto? That's going to be a big part of it. So to me, I think this was a very positive conversation. I don't think you should be surprised about the support of Stearns. I don't think you should be surprised about the fact that Cohen doesn't want to be known as a churn and burn Steinbrenner of the 80s type. I do think the passion and the care and the amount of knowledge he has about what's going on inside his organization should make you feel good. He's not disconnected. I think he really straddled and balanced that line that we've seen, like I said, many owners cross over and do more harm than good. And if you took anything negative from this, I really like to hear, because I'm all ears. I'm not trying to be Pollyannish here. I'm not trying to be a Cohen, as that people like to say, bootlicker. I mean, Steve Cohen, I know he listens to things that I've said. I know that for a fact. Everybody listens to something that anybody who has even a small, and I'm a small piece of this universe. I'm not naive. I know I'm a niche product. But everybody who does something like what I do, their information gets somewhere to someone in the Mets organization, or whatever organization they're covering. If you're doing Knicks content, Yankees content, whatever it may be. Now, let's just end here. So, and this is really, really important. So when people say, hey, I don't understand, Mike, why are you so concerned about firing Stearns? And why is it a big deal that you overthrow, you know, you turn over the organization? Or they don't understand why, or they're treating Stearns like it's just firing a GM. Let's just go, and this is just a top line. I'm not going to get deep into that. So what does the president of baseball operations do? They have the entire organizational strategy. They hire and manage the baseball personnel of the entire front office. That's, he doesn't have a GM, a GM, assistant GMs, director of scouting, director of player development, the farm director, the analytics department, the medical staff, the major league manager. I mean, they're building an entire leadership team. Anybody they bring in any of those facets of the organization is building from their, so remember, it starts with the organizational strategy and philosophy. All those hires stem from that. Okay, he owns every major transaction, the trades, the free agents, the arbitration, the non-tender, the Rule 5, the waiver claims. But he's going to rely on his assistant GMs and the people in his cabinet to advise him on that. Now, the buck stops with him, but I don't think he's not doing it himself. So he needs these people, again, people that are stemming from his type of philosophy he's putting out there. The draft, and this is where it's really been a big problem for the Mets with turnover. Draft and international strategy. When you look at how Brody Van Wagenen approached his draft, when he went really all in top rounds and put all his money in the top rounds and not so much later on with the slot, it's a bit of a feast or famine, and it burnt them. And it's part of why they're behind. I mean, the kind of players you target, the risk tolerance, how much you want to invest, the use of analytics versus traditional scouting, the farm oversight, player development. I mean, maybe that's in question because you're hearing some of the hitting philosophy challenges or situations that Chavez brought up. Collaboration with ownership. I mean, how does he has to sell also Cohen on, hey, we got to stretch the payroll or we're not going to go out. You heard Cohen talk about it with Sherman and Heyman. You know, you could go out and have a philosophy and say, I don't want to give pitchers X number of years, but if the rest of the league is not operating under those rules, well, what are you going to do? The timeline, he's got to look not only this year, but 5 years from now. That's why he made the Alonso decision. That's why he made the Nimmo decision. He's got to evaluate the managers and the coaches and the roster philosophy. You know, really make sure the communication between the front office and the field is solid and that the message and what they actually want to accomplish and how they want this team to run is being executed. I mean, that's, in a nutshell, a Cliff Notes version. It's a lot. If you take him out of that equation, you just don't plug and play somebody. You just don't. You can, but then where you start day one, you fire Stearns, let's say July 1st. That was yesterday. You fire Stearns. You plug and play XYZ executive to take his job, who may hire a general manager as well. Right now, Stearns has got assistant GMs. You know, when they say he's doing the job of both, he's got assistant GMs underneath him. He's just eliminating a layer of somebody that he probably feels that he's already got with his assistant GMs just without the title. You take Stearns out, all that is what the new guy has got to take on. And if, they're a Stearns clone, okay, maybe they keep everybody. You don't know if the people that work in these departments want to stick around. If Stearns is gone, they may just, at the end of the year, find other jobs. I mean, maybe they have a contract, but you're looking at least 24 months to fix that. And in that 24 months, if you think anything is going to be more functional on the field of the big league field, you got something else coming for you. By the way, agents and free agents are going to see that and go, I don't know if I want to go there. Well, Mike, you know, if the money's right. Yeah, you're right. And that will matter with some free agents. But at Tarik Skubal, the money's going to be right in a few other places than New York. And if you remember Juan Soto, the money was virtually the same with the Yankees. It was the pitch and whatever the vision that they put out there. And maybe it's Cohen as a recruiter that made the difference. Now, your general manager, sure, they have some of the same crossover with the president of baseball operations, but they're just executing the strategy from above. The daily baseball operations, more so about the field and the big league club. It's about the big league club, the roster. They're not necessarily, now they have a voice at the table, but they work for the president of baseball operations who's setting the philosophy. Now, sometimes maybe a general manager, and in the old days, the Frank Cashins of the world, you know, heck, even going all the way up to Omar Minaya not too long ago. a lot of this crossed over. It became much bigger now, where I don't really think you can. You just can't. It's too much. So that's my message for this morning. I hope it gives you something to chew on here as we head into the holiday weekend. I wanted to get the Cohen reaction off my chest. I also wanted to really articulate in a way, and I apologize if I come across as condescending, because I don't mean to be. Because even as I started to list it out and research and do what I had to do, I started to say, yeah, that makes sense, that makes sense. Because sometimes we forget the enormity of the position that Stearns has and the repercussions of blowing it up. Now, 24 months from now, and I said it on Sunday, and Cohen validated it. 24 months from now, June of 28, we're still in this malaise, and the farm system's a mess, and the big league club doesn't look well structured. And worse yet, maybe there's new rules, and the Mets are not positioned well to succeed financially under those rules. Then we're having a different conversation about, hey, this didn't work, what's next? Which would even be worse, because you're 2 years into a manager, a new manager, and a new person comes in, and you might have to start this thing all over again. This is a situation, and I'll leave you guys with this. This is a situation that if you act too hastily, a bad year becomes a bad 5 years, becomes a bad decade overnight. Overnight. There's plenty of baseball teams that went, look at the Seattle Mariners. It took them a while to get back to the postseason. It's not all about payroll. It's also about the turnover and what have you. It's a problem. And, you know, look at the Yankees in the 80s. I mean, they had some really competitive teams that didn't work out. So it wasn't like they were a mess. But if Steinbrenner doesn't get suspended and G. Michael doesn't do what he does, the Yankees became bad in 1990. I mean, 96 doesn't happen. That easily could have become a bad decade. Look at the Knicks, 20 years. And 20 years went by fast because there were times where they got in the right direction, but for a variety of reasons, it got off track with one bad move or one bad decision, and then it start the clock over again, and now you're back to another five-year run. So 5 years, start over, 5 years, start. These are 5 years. You know, 5 years is really in sports, goes by quick. And if you make a mistake, you look up and you're like, wow, it's been 15 years. This is a mess. And you've lost one or two generations of fans, and you don't want to do that. So anyway, I hope you guys all have a great holiday week and enjoy the 4th. Try to enjoy whatever baseball you do watch. Hopefully, like, this show kicks off your Mets content for the weekend in a productive way. We will be doing a show this weekend. Got to see, you know, see what kind of things come up. I am going to be looking a little bit closer at Francisco Alvarez, because I think right now with the baby Mets, he's kind of like the one that maybe can provide some value out of that group. I do want to get into the Eric Chavez podcast and some of his comments. I think that there was a lot of nonsense in there and contradictions, and there's certainly a battle between coaches that are getting pushed out that are of the generation of Chavez versus the new wave of coaches. But I also think there's some concerning criticisms that Chavez has that maybe Cohen, and I'm sure Cohen listened to it, that Cohen is challenging Stearns on when it comes to hitting philosophy, when it comes to viewing prospects and when to hold them and when to fold them and things like that. We'll talk about that on Sunday. So anyway, thanks for tuning in to this midweek edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Come join me at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. Chat for free, premium content, updates on the show, all at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks from Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your holiday weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast on Sunday. Till then, take care, everybody. Meet the Mets. Head for the